Good morning, everyone. The panel has before it a total of four cases. One of them is being submitted without argument later today on the briefs. That is Appeal 1374 from 2008, McZeal versus Sprint Nextel. And the argument list of three appeals will hear argument first in Urbay, Appeal 1358 from 2008, Urbay versus ITC. Mr. Hampton, good morning to you. Welcome to the court.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Phil Hampton, and I am counsel for the appellants, Urbay Electromedizine GmbH and Urbay USA Incorporated. Today, Urbay appeals from the construction of two claim terms from the ITC. Those claim terms are working channel and side rig.
I thought there was an agreement by the two sides with the definition of side rig. How can you appeal from something if you agreed to it in front of the trial forum?
Well, Your Honor, we agreed with side rig. But then the ITC, ALJ, actually went back and said side really had to mean parallel. And that was never in any of the parties' briefs that side really, if you construed it to mean alongside, that alongside then meant parallel. So in effect, we believe that the construction by the ALJ was that side really meant parallel.
So, in other words, you're saying he totally changed his construction between an earlier stage and a later stage, in your view?
Yes, in our view, that's what happened.
And the one you agreed to up front was correct, and you changed the one from later, you say, is incorrect?
Yes, Your Honor. Matter of fact, it was Urbay in the post-hearing brief, the ITC, that proposed side relief would be interpreted as a long side.
Is this an error in the infringement analysis or in the claim construction?
I think it's an error in the claim construction because if he construes it as...
I never know the difference. If you know the difference, you're smarter than I am. But tell me, how can you get around the two working channels, though? You've got clearly a first and a second working channel. You've got a plurality mentioned in another point in the claims of channels. Isn't that fatal to your claim, even if we agreed with you on sideways?
No, Your Honor. I mean, the claim says there has to be plurality of working channels. The claim also says that in one of the working channels, that optical means are placed within one of the working channels.
The second working channel.
The second
that's
working.
Very clear. The optical means positioned within a second
within
working channel.
Within a second working channel. Yes,
so you've got to have a second one. Help me out here. How can you overcome that?
Well, we overcome it by overcoming the improper definition of the, or the improper construction of the working channel by the ALJ.
What was the error specifically?
The error is that the patent itself, the specification itself, discloses many different working channels. And some of the working channels...
What was it that he said that the definition of working channel was that you say is wrong?
The ITC construed working channel to mean a channel for which a device that performs work may be inserted.
What part
and
of
we
that
believe that a working channel, you don't need a device inserted through which work is performed.
It doesn't have to do with the fixed optics. In the accused device, they're fixed optics and they're not inserted in and out of a channel. And the decision is not entirely clear by the ALJ, but as I understand it, he's saying that a fixed optic installation is not a working channel. And it seems to me that that's supported by Figure 1 and the description of Figure 1 in the specification. Because if you look at Figure 1, there are three things labeled there. The two working channels, 6 and 7, and the optics are labeled separately as 5. And that's not called a working channel in the specification in column 4. So doesn't that suggest strongly that fixed optics are not a working channel?
No, we don't believe so, Your Honor.
Is what I described incorrect?
We believe it is incorrect.
What's incorrect about it?
We believe it's incorrect because if you look at, again, Claim 1 says that optical means are in a second working channel.
Put aside Claim 1 for a moment. Let's just talk about Figure 1 and the description of Figure 1 in Column 4. Figure 1 shows optics, Bob, right? And that's not described as a working channel.
But optics 5 is the optical means. We believe optics 5 is the optical means.
Right.
So therefore...
So you can have optical means that aren't in a working channel, right?
We don't believe so. We don't.
How is that consistent with Figure 1 in Column 4?
Again, we believe that if you have to read... You cannot read out any portion of the patent.
No, I understand, but address what I'm talking about. The labeling, it seems to me that the labeling of Figure 1 is really fatal to your theory because it's showing 5 optics as not being a working channel. Fixed optics as not being a working channel. Isn't that correct? Am I wrong in reading the specification?
You are not incorrect in that the words fixed optics is not equated to a working channel in the description of Figure 1.
That's a problem for
you. However, we don't think so because, again, in the specification, in the claims, there is talk of optical means being disposed within a second working channel. So we believe that fixed optics of Figure 1, which is an optical mean, is therefore part of, or therefore is within a working channel.
Well, Claim 1 could be referring to insertable optics, couldn't it?
But again, if you look at the entire patent as a whole, the only type of optics which gives breadth to the entire claim is if the optics are fixed. Because later in the patent, we talk about a field of view, a fixed field of view. And if you had insertable optical means, you would be able to change the field of view by just moving the insertable optical means in and out. However, there's talk in the patent that you want to pick up endoscope that has a wide view, because if not, you would have to either move the entire endoscope or change endoscopes. And we believe the only way that works is if the optics are built in and fixed.
But in theory, you could have movable optics, right?
In theory, you could have movable optics, but our position is that working channel must be construed broadly enough to include built-in optical means.
So what is your point then, that Figure 1 refers to some different embodiment than Claim 1?
No, Your Honor. Again, we believe that in Figure 1, you have a plurality of working channels. You have
two plurality of working channels, neither of which is the optic, right?
We disagree with that.
Why don't you agree that that's what Figure 1 shows?
Again, Figure 1, there's fixed optics in Figure 1. That is the optical means. The patent says the optical means...
It's not labeled working channel.
But the patent says that optical means are disposed in a second working channel. So it is our position that even though it is not called out as a working channel, that those optics in Figure 1 are within a second working channel.
Show me that in the spec. Show me in the spec where you support your view.
The discussion of the figures at the top of column 4.
Actually, the yes, John. We agree that it's not discussed in the, that is not discussed in the reference to the figures. We agree that that's the case.
Is it discussed anywhere?
Yes, it is discussed. It's discussed where there's talk about a optical means disposed within a instrument channel. And I will get you the site momentarily.
Do you
want
to say the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. The English.
Please support Jonathan Engler for the International Trade Commission. We were discussed a bit today. This contributory infringement case, if I may just for a moment digress from the claim construction issues, is about a very limited number of endoscopic probes manufactured by Irby's competitor, Kalis Martin, and sold to hospitals in the United States by Kennedy.
We know the facts. We read the briefs. It seems like you should be responding to what he just said.
But the point that I'd like to add is that no matter how the court construes working channel or side working, that there is no substantial evidence at all that the Irby 1.5, that the Kennedy 1.5 millimeter probes were ever used, or that...
But that doesn't solve the problem. With respect to the 2.3 millimeter, we have to decide this working channel issue, don't we? Because that's the basis for the non-infringement problem.
That is true, but with respect to the working channel, there's no evidence that as you point out, that a probe with a plurality of working channels was ever used. But there's also, before getting to the working channel issue, there's no testimony. Or substantial evidence to support the idea that the 2.3 probes were used in a manner that even under Irby's claim construction is infringing. In other words, the only testimony on the record as to how the 2.3 millimeter probes were used.
This is a sideworthy point?
This is a sideworthy point.
But I don't read the ALJ as having rested the non-infringement finding with respect to the 2.3 millimeter on the sideworthy issue. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. That is correct. But my point is simply that the record has, there's no substantial evidence to support the argument that it was used in an infringing manner, and the burden was on Irby in the first place to make that point.
But the administrative law judge missed the main point of the case then?
Well, no, the administrative law judge didn't reach.
I thought you were defending his judgment, not questioning it.
Yes, you are. He didn't miss the main point because he stopped at the working channel construction, which is, this is why, of course, that's such a significant issue. But my point is, that even on the substantial evidence side, that Irby can't point to any substantial evidence to support its fundamental infringement point. But back to the, obviously, to debate the ALJ's claim construction, the commission clearly views the language of the specification and the ALJ's construction as being fully consistent with the notion of having two working channels, and explicitly set forth in the specification and in Claim 1 and Claim 35, having a plurality of working channels. But beyond that, that the ALJ's construction is broad enough to include built-in optics in addition to the two working channels. And the reason that I bring this up is that Irby has argued below and to this court that ALJ's claim construction would preclude, effectively make it possible the preferred embodiment in the specification in which you have the built-in optics. That's just manifestly not the case, because having as the court has already noted today.
I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand what you're saying. As I understand, the accused device here has fixed optics, right? And what the ALJ is saying is that fixed optics are not a working channel, right? That you might have movable optics that could be in a working channel, but fixed optics, built-in optics, are not a working channel, right? You can't move something in and out.
That's correct. But the
FJ... Do you defend that? Do you think that's right?
Well, that actually goes a little further than the ALJ, to tell you, because there's nothing in the specification or the claim that requires the optic to be fixed.
It's not a requirement that they be fixed. You could have movable optics, you could have fixed optics. We're dealing with an accused device which has fixed optics. Right?
The accused device is probed. The accused device, because this is a means plus function claim, you can't. The type of endoscope that may be used can vary. The issue is, was there evidence that a probe, the accused probes, were used in an endoscopic device in a manner that infringed the claim? So what I'm saying is that the issue of what's at issue here is not the construction of an overall endoscope. There may be endoscopes in which you have fixed optics, maybe endoscopes that you have movable optics. But the question from a claim construction perspective with respect to working channel is just there must be more than one working channel. And if, as Irby's argument is not disputing that there must be a plurality of working channels, but they're arguing that fixed optics in which nothing can move necessarily must be treated as a working channel.
Here we go.
And I beg your pardon?
We got that.
But my point is simply that the ALJ's construction would allow both for the construction for fixed optics and for removable optics. And then there's his reading does not read out. I'm simply responding to their point that our ALJ's plain construction precludes fixed optics, which is not true. I'm responding to this is an argument that Irby raised repeatedly, that there's somehow an inconsistency between the ALJ's plain construction of working channel and the existence of the fixed optics.
I don't understand what you're saying. I really don't.
I beg your pardon?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Irby has argued that unless you treat an endoscopic probe which has a working channel and built-in optics, and unless you treat both channels as working channels, that the preferred embodiment in the specification is, in effect, precluded by the ALJ's claim construction. I think perhaps the problem, as I'm stating, is obvious, which is that there is no inconsistency between, as you discussed at length before I came up here, between the illustration and specification, regardless of whether it contains a fixed optics or not, because of the existence, in addition to the optics, of plurality of working channels. I think the bottom line from the Commission's perspective, I think, is that we have agreed that the issues you raised earlier, the problems you identified with the claim construction offered by Irby are precisely the problems that the LJ had below that the Commission shared. So, unless I think at this point,
I understood your primary argument to be under any possible claim construction of any of the terms, Irby can't win because their proof was zero. You kept saying no evidence, no evidence.
Yeah, so we do think there is no evidence.
But therefore, we wouldn't need to reach the claim construction issue, in your view, if we agreed with you that there was no evidence that would be sufficient under any claim construction.
Yes, Your Honor. That's why I began at that point earlier, which is that it's really not necessary, particularly on the 1.5 millimeter probes, at a minimum, to reach these issues. And as far as the 2.3 millimeter probes, as a legal question of whether Irby has met its burden of proof, and the burden of proof lay with Irby to show some form of infringement. And even under Irby's claim construction, the use of an endoscopic probe, whether 1.5 millimeter or 2.3 millimeter, in a manner perpendicular to the tissue to be coagulated, is a non-infringing use. They don't dispute this claim construction. And the only testimony on the record at all as to how these 2.3 millimeter probes were used is that they were used in a manner perpendicular to the tissue to be coagulated. So without reaching the claim construction for the term working channel, without reaching
What testimony are you referring to about perpendicular?
There's the testimony of Dr. Alcalas.
I thought he just said he tried to make the angle 90 degrees.
He said he tried, he generally tried to make the angle all thoughts were facing petition, which is precisely my point. But that use, under Irby's claim construction, would not be an infringing use.
Because Irby agrees that a precise 90% is not infringing?
He agrees that a perpendicular...
What about 80% or 100 degrees?
Well, the claim construction that Irby offered to the trial court...
Under Mr. Hampton's view, an angle of 80 or 100 would be infringing, right? It's only if it's exactly 90 that it's not infringing.
Well, that is... Irby's claim construction of a long side is...
Yes or no?
Is a moving target. I'm not quite sure. He seems to be arguing, as far as I can understand, that any angle short of 90 degrees, 89.99...
Figure 3 and figure 6 already show something that is far from parallel. If we're going to rely on the parallel notion that the administrative law judge relied on, you have a problem, don't you? Those figures show it coming at an angle. And maybe if that angle were off a little bit, you'd be at the chief judge's 80 degrees.
Well, the ALJ's construction of sidewardly was that related to the longitudinal axis of the probe. And he said that basically the question was the relation between the longitudinal axis of the probe and the tissue.
He's saying it's generally parallel, right?
Correct.
Which is a little odd because that language doesn't appear in Claim 1. It appears in, I think, Claims 17 and 29. So the absence of that language from Claim 1 would maybe suggest that sidewardly doesn't mean generally parallel, wouldn't it?
Well, the notion there were two issues on that. First of all, the construction of generally parallel to, and that meaning not in the actual direction of, was Irby's proposed claim construction in his post-hearing brief to the judge.
I don't think you're addressing my question. How can we interpret Claim 1 sidewardly and Claim 1 to mean generally parallel when the language generally parallel appears specifically in Claims 17 and 29? Doesn't that suggest that sidewardly means something different than generally parallel?
Well, generally one assumes under the doctrine of claim differentiation that you have different terms that have different meanings. In this case, Irby's proposed claim construction was presumed their own definition of their own patent terms was that they were the equivalent terms. This is not language the LJ came up with. But secondly, the generally parallel to language arose out of testimony to the effect that the lines of the gastrointestinal wall and tissue generally is not 100% even plane. You know, there are ridges. So that along the longitudinal axis.
You're not addressing my question.
Well, I think I did, Your Honor, in that while one would presume under ordinary circumstances that there was a distinction in meaning between generally parallel to elsewhere in another claim. In this case, the ALJ reasonably found that there really wasn't a different meaning, and that his basis for finding that was a construction proposed by the plaintiff itself.
We're just talking about whatever method gives the best coverage to the coagulant, right?
In effect, I mean, I think what's important to remember, and these aren't issues.
That certainly doesn't require parallelism, does it?
No.
I mean, the patent show an angle, and that angle might, with the imprecision of a handheld device, increase to 80 degrees, as the chief judge said.
The fundamental question is this relationship between the axis and the tissue. In other words, both of the figures which Irby relies on, which is 15 and 20, and to which the ALJ pointed in discussing his generally parallel, his construction of sidewardly as meaning alongside, by the way. It's a whole second set of questions. The ALJ never construed in the claim, in his claim construction, to say that sidewardly meant generally parallel to. And the issue arose in an infringement context when he found that because there were, there wasn't testimony about that anyone had used these probes in a manner directed alongside or the longitudinal axis directed at the tissue to be coagulated, there was no testimony that these probes had been used in a manner that was alongside or with the longitudinal axis effectively direct pointed in a manner parallel to the tissue, that there was no evidence of infringement. But the this issue of whether or not generally parallel to the equivalent of cyberbullying is an issue that wrote that Irby has raised, and really because they're disputing the ALJ's infringement analysis, and they're coloring it as a claim construction issue. But they didn't have a problem with the generally parallel notion until they didn't like the ALJ's infringement analysis that appeared.
There were 11 probes missing at this North Carolina hospital. What happened to them if they were not used?
Well, there was testimony from the nurse manager who was in charge of that lab that there are many reasons that these probes can go missing. Testing, being enslaved, being used for administrative purposes, and that there were also other probes in the cabinet. These weren't the only ones. There were also Irby probes there.
Does that mean you don't know?
I beg your pardon?
Does that mean you do not know?
We do not know.
Well, why don't you just say that, and then Judge Greer has a direct answer?
Well, the issue is that the nurse manager said she did not, not that I did. But the...
You're allowed to rest your views on testimony.
The other thing to bear in mind, I think, that may be helpful in putting some context around these missing 11 probes is that the nurse manager testified that over a calendar year, they did about 12 of these procedures. So the test of this evidence that there were 10 or 11 missing in a six-week period when 12 procedures in total were done in the course of a year further suggests that these probes, that something happens, may well have happened to these probes other than having been used in an APC procedure. Because there's no testimony they had done a dozen in 5 weeks.
If you were to decide against Irby on the working channel issue, that resolves the case, right? We don't need to reach this.
That's right. That is correct.
All right, thank you. We'll hear from you.
Thank you. Good.
May it please the court, I'm Timothy DeWitt of the 24 IP Law Group on behalf of the interveners. I will try to be extremely brief since it's already been covered by other counsel. First, with respect to the working channels, there's been some discussion of figure one showing the two working channels, and I would just point out that in figure 12 of the patent also shows there are two working channels in addition to the built-in optics. The second thing I would like to point out is that with respect to the optical means that can be inserted into the channel and is movable, there was testimony from Irby's expert witness, Mr. Walbrick, and that appears at JA 1255, line 24, through JA 1257, line 24. And in that testimony, he admitted that there was such a thing as an insertable optical fiber that could be inserted into that second working channel. And then the final point I'd like to make is just an answer to one of the first questions that came up was that the intervener's position would be that the ALJ correctly interpreted the term cyberly because the parties agreed on that interpretation. And the issue is really one of whether it was properly applied to the accused device. And our position obviously would be that it was properly applied.
Because?
Because if you look at the way the devices were used, and in particular, this comes up with the 1.5 millimeter probe, where Ms. Eisenbacher, who was the nurse manager, testified very clearly that there are all kinds of procedures in which they can point the probe directly at the tissue so it is perpendicular. And because she said there are lots of procedures that do that, and there was no evidence that she knew of that the accused probes were even used at all, let alone what type of procedure, there was no evidence of a specific instance of direct infringement. And I think that's really the key on that, on the cyber issue, because it's only dealing with the smaller probes, which I think you pointed out earlier.
Are these the same products that are involved in this report, can't they?
Yes, they are the same.
Are these claim construction issues that we've been talking about today at issue in the district court case, too?
I Our position would be that the answer is no, because the summary judgment decision was based upon a different claim element, the flow rate claim element, which was not an issue in this appeal. I think there might have been some briefing on other claim elements, but our position would be that no, these same claim construction issues are not an issue in the district court case.
Not dispositive or not litigated?
Not litigated. I would say they are dispositive, but I would say that they are not. They were not decided by the district court. Because it was summary judgment. Well, it was summary judgment in the district court, and there were strict page limitations. So in the district court, we picked one claim element to really focus the arguments on, and the district judge agreed with us. In the ALJ...
So what you're saying is that if somehow or other we were to reverse in that other case on the claim construction, non-infringement determination made by the district court, that these other issues would then be in the case.
Yes.
They just haven't been decided by the district court.
Yes, that is
correct. There were claim construction.
There was a claim construction. There was a Markman decision.
Covering some of the terms that are disputed in this case.
Absolutely. But those are the terms that were the basis of the ALJ's decision in this case, the basis of non-infringement, were not the basis the district court used in her summary judgment decision. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Your Honor, I would like to respond to a couple of things that were stated. First, it is Irby's position that the claim construction of working channel was wrong because the ALJ read out of his claim construction various working channels that he even admitted were, quote, working channels in the patent. For example, he read out any working channel in which a device was not inserted to perform work, but yet he said that the patent itself said that a working channel could mean a channel through which gas was delivered or a channel through which suction was applied. So therefore, his definition, his construction of working channel is erroneous as a matter of law, because we at no time did Irby disclaim the definition of working channel or certain things as working channel that are in the patent itself. Another issue that was raised was the 1.5 millimeter probes. I think Mr. Engler misspoke. It wasn't that these probes were gone over a course of 6 weeks, it was over the course of a year. And again, there was testimony that, yes, they had Irby probes. They used up all the Irby probes before they started using the Kennedy probes. They did 12 APC procedures within a year. They had purchased 20 Kennedy probes. And at the end of the year, they only had 9 probes left. We think that's substantial evidence that these probes were used in APC procedures. Also, Mrs. Eisenmacher.
Wait a second. How does that win the case for you? Just to say there's substantial evidence supporting you. There was a trial in this case. And the fact finder disagrees with your assessment of the evidence, found it deficient. Substantial doesn't seem to be a strong enough statement. You'd have to say that it was compelling, that any reasonable fact finder would have to agree with it.
And that actually is our position, that any reasonable fact finder would have to agree that
at least where's the evidence that the use reads on the claims? If it was used, even if those were used and not lost or in some kind of administrative purpose, how do we know they were used in accordance with the claims?
Okay, well, they're saying that they weren't even used. We say that once it's used, and once the claim construction of side relief and working channel is changed to comport with the facts of this case, that you have to go back to, you have to remand it back to the ITC for a decision on whether or not, with the proper claim construction, there are issues.
But you don't have evidence of use at all. How can you,
again,
you don't get to prove something that you don't have in the record. You haven't proved its use was in accordance with the claims under any.
Well, I mean, again, if the claim construction is rectified, then there is use in the record. We believe
that... What exact testimony would satisfy your burden under some altered construction? I can't find the testimony. You're going to have to pinpoint it for me.
Well actually, the ALJ basically...
No, I'm asking a question about evidence, about testimony. I don't care about the ALJ or what we're saying or what your position is or anything else. I'm asking what line of what witness's testimony proved under your construction of the claim term that it was infringed. Whose testimony? What page?
Well, there was, not only was there testimony from Mrs. Eisenmacher, but...
Well, where in her testimony did she describe the use of these this equipment in a way that would read on the claim? And Judge Rader asked this question about 3 minutes ago, and we still don't have an answer. Precisely what did she say that showed infringement?
She explained how the devices were actually used. She said that that the doctors would attempt to angulate the probes toward the bleeding tissue. And again, the one thing that's been missing from this whole discussion here today, Your Honor, is the fact that how these things actually work.
How does that prove your case?
We believe that if there's angulation toward the tissue, that is not parallel at the tissue.
She doesn't know what actually happened. All she's saying is it's her understanding that the surgeon attempts to use angulation. That doesn't prove any particular angle in any particular procedure on any particular day.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that testimony is such that if you agree that these probes were actually used, and they also used early probes, which were exactly identical, that by using them and angulating them at the tissue shows that there is cyberly use of the probes. So therefore, again, if you agree that cyberly means something other than parallel, and if you agree that the claim construction of a working channel is incorrect because the ALJ impermissibly required a working channel to be a channel in which work is done through an inserted device, then you have to remand to the ALJ.
But could I understand this last exchange? That concerns only the testimony about the 1.5 millimeter probe, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what is the testimony about the infringing, infringement using the 2.3 millimeter?
Well, Your Honor, as the ALJ found, that there was ample testimony that people used these probes. They put a probe through a working channel, and they agreed.
He rested his decision with respect to the 2.3 on different grounds.
Yes.
And that was that it didn't satisfy the working channel.
It didn't satisfy the working channel.
And if we were to agree with him on the working channel construction, we don't have to reach any of this other stuff.
If you agree with him on the working channel, you don't have to go any further. But we believe you should not agree with him on working channel because they had to view, all these doctors performing this procedure had to view through optical means the procedure that was being done with the probe down a second working channel. And again, working channels should be defined broadly enough to be both an insertable and a fixed optics. And I think if Mr. Engler's correct that it can be either, then we think that the analysis of the ALJ was incorrect because we have fixed optics in a working channel, and there was evidence that these procedures were used with such an endoscope, and you had, of course, the probe down that was delivering the argon plasma down the second working channel. So if they can view the procedure through fixed optics, and fixed optics or insertable optics meets optics through a second working channel, then we believe that there's ample evidence of infringement. But I still believe that you would have to remand back to the ALJ.
Mr. Hampton, is it possible that this case is the case of the missing witness in the sense that if the point is to prove an angle between the electricity-emitting portion of the apparatus compared with the tissue being coagulated, it seems like you needed to call one of the surgeons who did one of the procedures, where the surgeon would say, yes, I did it at a 45-degree angle.
Your Honor.
And that would be the proof you need, but I didn't see any such proof in the record here.
But Your Honor, we don't need the proof of any particular angle. The way this procedure works is that you have such a low flow rate that it comes tumbling out. So all you need to do is get close to the tissue when you coagulate. In fact, that's why under this procedure, you can actually coagulate tissue that's back behind the end of the probe. You just have to get near there. The electricity will go, will try to find the path of least resistance, which is bleeding tissue, which means anywhere near the end of the probe where tissue is bleeding, you will get coagulation. So therefore, as long as the probe is alongside, in the general vicinity, is near the tissue you're trying to coagulate. And we, you know, one of the things we disclaim up front is you don't want the tissue to be right at 90 degrees because you have a lot greater chance of getting argon embolism that way. But as long as you're anywhere close to the tissue, as long as you're close to the tissue to be coagulated, the angle really doesn't make much of a difference because you're going to get coagulation. The whole thing about parallel is really a red herring. Nowhere in the patent we discuss parallel. Nowhere in did Irby ever say that parallel. We say that it should include parallel orientations. But like we clearly show in the gray brief in enhanced figures 15 and 20 at pages 15 and 16, that, you know, there's, I think in enhanced figure 15, we point out and colorize five places where the tissue is being coagulated. Of those five, only one of them is generally parallel. The same thing with enhanced figure 20. Four places where tissue is being coagulated, only one of them is generally parallel. And all the parties agree that 15 and 20 show sidedly. So 15 and 20 show sidedly, and most of the angular orientation are something other than generally parallel. Generally parallel should not be how sidedly is. And again, Judge Rader, you're probably right. I don't know if it's claim construction or how they actually did his infringement analysis. And of course, in the IGC, this is also a domestic industry analysis. But the long and the short of it is, sidedly cannot mean parallel, because there's nothing in the patent that shows that sidedly means parallel.
All right, we've given both sides ample extra time, so we're going to conclude the argument. We'll take the appeal under advisement. Thank you.